Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.
With a grand national flavour, clearly, we will start with this Trainers' Championship and just elucidate a little bit more. Jonathan Harding, who wins and by how much?
I think, looking at it now, I would have to say Willie Mullins, and hopefully by not a lot. I'd love it if it came down to the final day at Sandown and some of those big races. I know, having spoken to Paul Nicholls and Dan Skelton, that they will be firing a lot of horses at this. Mullins the same. So I think it's been a great addition to the sort of season, really, hasn't it? It's been a nice added... I know Trainers' Championships and the like aren't for everybody and people think they're a bit of a sideshow, but this year it's really exciting.
Well, you've got all the human drama ingredients to make it interesting. I thought... I'd be really interested to know how Paul Nicholls is feeling now, because he's gone in the lead. He's gone in as favourite. He was in the lead after Thursday. He's in third place now. He needs one more championship to equal Martin Pipe. He's going to have to properly pull this out of the fire, isn't he?
I think he'll still fancy his chances.
Of course he will.
When we spoke about earlier, he'll still fancy his chances because traditionally, Ayr and Sandown, he is very strong at. So I imagine that he is not without hope. But that 140 grand that Willie Mullins has on Paul Nicholls, you just think he's got so many. It's not the fact that he's got horses to run. He's got so many that he can split who goes to Punchestown, who goes to Sandown. He can still have multiple representatives in all those races. It's the numbers as well as the quality.
OK, so you think Mullins will win. Who do you think will win the battle for second, then?
I think Nicholls. I really think he's been written off too early here.
And now
that's
I can
the third favourite.
Feel Skelton at home now. You're writing him off.
I've lit the fire under him.
You've lit the fire under him. He'll be there fired up. He's had another good week, hasn't he?
Yeah, terrific week.
Yeah.
His horses, even the ones that ran at Cheltenham, I think they probably feel a little bit unlucky with one or two. But the interesting thing about his horses is that so many horses are targeted at specific races, like Katira, for example. And he gets it right more often than not.
Talk about John Bond. I mean, we know we could run a JP McManus Gold Cup next year with the Irish, with the Grand National winner, with Corbett's Cross, with, I know the way you're thinking, with Factor File. Where do you think the limit of John Bond's stamina is after this week's victory in the Melling Chase?
Well, I actually backed him for the Turners a few years ago, thinking we were going to see him stepped up and trip, and I love the way that he did it at Aintree. Now they have decided to go that route. I saw he was quoted for the King George. Maybe a race like that would be right at the end. I mean, I'm no expert. Obviously, they'll have a view, Nicky Henderson and JP McManus, but that looks like a race like that could just be within his wheelhouse. But I think Ryanair would be the logical race for him.
It's similar. I think Ryanair.
My heart feels heavy at the idea of a horse of elite calibre like that being pointed to that race and not either the Champion Chase or the Gold Cup, but, you know, I guess that's just the way of the world.
Tradition, yes, and yeah. I would be the same. I'd prefer to have either... the two options of either the Champion Chase or the Gold Cup. But the Ryanair seems to be the logical race. After the race, it was interesting hearing Nicky Henderson saying twice that Nico de Boinville wouldn't give him the encouragement for
to
3 miles. Yeah. Mm.
And although John Bond wasn't making the same sort of beautiful shape over a couple of the fences down the back as some were, again, that race IQ data told us actually he was making a lot of ground at his fences.
That's the thing. He's got quite a forward-going style. He switches off a lot better now. He's maturing all the time, and you can see, hence why they've been able to go 2.5 with him. But the way that he gains ground at his fences makes you think more on the shorter side than a three-miler. But like you, I'd love to see them have a go.
All right, if you were Mark Walsh and you ran the JP McManus Gold Cup now, who would you ride?
Factor File.
I mean, you say that with no hesitation at all. Not Corbett's Cross, not I Know the Way You're Thinking, not...
Factor File.
No,
Factor
not Iron Maximus. Don't think it... OK. You definitely ride Factor File, then?
I think so.
Okay. I'd love to see it.
Have you backed him for next year's Gold Cup?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I've actually backed him for the King George.
OK. There were no visible protesters at Aintree yesterday that I saw either on the roads coming in or at the track. There was actually a Palestine protest I saw on my way in, but I didn't see any presence of Animal Rising. I'm not saying they weren't there, but they weren't visible and there was no disruption to the race. Why do you think that was?
I think just with the what sort of the fallout from last year with the civil cases, with, from the Derby as well, with the civil cases, with the sort of legal ramifications of it, I think they probably decided to take a more passive approach. Generally, they seem to be more passive and less focused on horse racing at the moment, whether I'm, you know, need to touch wood or anything, but that seems to be the direction of travel. I think last year horse racing was a very useful vehicle for a big impact. Here now, we are, this is our message.
Now maybe too costly?
Now too costly, I think. And also, they've sort of done their big disruption. Now it's a case of they're trying to consolidate. I think they just used racing as a very convenient vehicle for a much broader message, and they seem to be a little bit more fighting a few what they would call battles in different areas. It seems to be less all about horse racing. Mm.
Is this anything to do with racing's response, or is this simply the way that Animal Rising are, or groups such as that are now strategising?
I think it's to do as well with racing's response. I think that's absolutely right. I think last
year... Do you really?
I think last year when they came at racing, when Animal Rising, animal protesters came at racing, we were perhaps a little bit disjointed in how we were tackling the issues. Yes, there were people willing to speak up for it, but the slightly more robust, concerted, joined-up effort that we've produced over the last 12 months, I think, has probably given us a little bit more strength and allowed us to argue with them with far more, validity to the arguments that we provide. I mean, obviously, horse PWR is an example of that.
Yeah. I want to shelve in right behind you, and there's just a tiny bit of caution. It's a bit like saying, this is the way Grand Nationals are going to look forever. Just never quite sure what's around the corner.
Of course. I'm not saying that that's the end of it, but I do think that that's a huge, huge reason why it's become a bit more challenging for them.
You made the point earlier that the build-up to the Grand National this year was just more smooth and there wasn't the kind of frenetic activity, the protesters hadn't held it up and the race just had a smoother feel to it. But obviously what you want to do, you want intensity, you want anticipation, you want build-up, you want drama, you want to be adrenalised in some ways going into the race, even if the sport doesn't want the horses and riders to be over-adrenalised. We ran a 3-mile hurdle at Aintree yesterday at 3:05. And by the time that was done and dusted and the kind of interminable post-race had gone on to 3:25, really, you're only starting the build-up to the Grand National about 3:30. Richie, you're working on network television. Mm. And you really haven't got that long to build up the big race. Is it long enough?
I don't think so. My
I don't either, even working on here.
My overriding sense is there should be longer build-up to the Grand National. I think the fact that, as you say, it's a 3-mile hurdle, very good race, obviously, the Melling, but the Aintree hurdle. But I think after that point...
Well, it was the Liverpool hurdle.
Sorry, the Liverpool
hurdle. 3 miles.
3 miles. So after that point, by the time the race is finished and you finish the wash-up of that race with all the connections and everything, the build-up to the Grand National is quite a concerted build-up.
Even with 30... OK, not 40 runs, but even with 34, as there should have been.
Yeah, I think you want an extra 20 minutes, personally.
I agree.
So what time would you put that race back to?
Well, I'd have...
If you want to run the race at 4 o'clock.
My own feeling is, I think, that... I think the Liverpool hurdle and Aintree hurdle could swap back, almost.
And what time would you run that race before the National?
I think I'd move that race back 1/4 hour. I'd run it at 2. If you want to run the Grand National at 4 o'clock, I'd run that race at 2:45 or 2:50. So you had a clear hour of build up for your network television coverage until 4 o'clock.
I think that's a much better option.
And then you can almost have a self-contained show. You know, as in you do your research.
Hour.
Yeah. And obviously we don't know what the viewing figure is yet, because it hasn't come through to us.
Not yet.
Let's talk about the Jockey Club prize money, Jonathan, because it's interesting timing. This came out on Monday morning of Aintree Week. I suppose from a PR point of view, maybe it's a good thing we've had Aintree in the interim because people have forgotten about it. But the Jockey Club announced significant prize money cuts on Monday, and that's in response to a poor performance at Cheltenham.
Yeah, and these are the knock-on effects of poor attendances. The Jockey Club's finances and their ability to offer their executive contributions for the remainder of the year, a lot of that hinges on the success of the Cheltenham Festival, and we need not beat around the bush. Attendances were down, particularly on one of the days, and this is the consequence. About £1.5 million from May onwards. It's worth noting they committed to pretty much record prize money at the start of the year. They've had to obviously adapt that because of the the knock-on effect of attendances and affordability checks and betting turnover and all the rest of it. So it's not good news, but it's not unsurprising news either, I don't think.
Have the cuts come in the right places, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I think that there needed to be a degree of consolidation, and those top races will still get the support that they need, I think.
This is a point I put to Nevin Truesdale earlier in the week when I spoke to him about it. They've given back Premier fixtures. The biggest, most recognisable racecourse group in the country, you know, responsible for Cheltenham, Aintree, Newmarket, Epsom, Sandown, they've given back Premier fixtures 3 months into premierisation, Rishi. What does that say about this project?
Well, that's...
It's a bit of a disaster, isn't it?
Well, it's a separate subject to talk about premierisation.
Well, this is all tied in.
I mean, what I mean is, in relation to premierisation and the importance of being labelled a Premier fixture, that's, I think, a separate subject.
So there are too many Premier fixtures?
Correct.
Well, clearly there are, because the Jockey Club can't sustain its own premierisation.
In relation to this, I'm saying that the Jockey Club are making a decision based on their finances, which you cannot dispute. You can't ask them to go and put their hand in their pocket and provide more money than they can actually afford. That long-term effect is just going to be ridiculous if you go down that route. But I think the comparison, or using premierisation as a tool to say giving those things back, I think that's a separate issue, because I think the whole idea of premierisation since its inception in January to now has been...
So there are too many Premier fixtures?
Yes. Yeah. 170?
Exactly. I mean, but if the Jockey Club are giving back Premier fixtures, then there are too many Premier fixtures.
Yeah, there are too many. I mean, that was pretty obvious from the start when everyone said, what are the 170 Premier fixtures that you can come up with? I mean, can we think of 170 Premier fixtures through a year?
Also, if you're, you know, perfectly and worthy aspirational medium grade tracks are wanting Premier fixtures, you can understand why they do. They want to aim up, and we're encouraging them to aim up. If they can only achieve that by taking money away from their other fixtures, it's not as though there's enough of a disparity in the quality of horse running at their medium grade fixtures to their slightly less good fixtures to justify that disparity in prize money, I would have thought. Are you following?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do follow.
Do you want to move on?
No, I'm happy to talk about this for longer, because I think that the whole idea of how it's been delivered, the premierisation, I feel that unfortunately somehow it got into the whole idea of labelling it premierisation to...
Which isn't even a word in the dictionary.
Also, it's unnecessary. When the information was first and initially provided, it was the phrase that was used around the 2 hours between 2 and 4 on a Saturday afternoon, or across the Premier fixtures, it was about cannibalisation of betting and turnover and how much was bet at that point. And because the good races were suffering because of the number of races taking place at the same time. Now, quite simply, you could have just said we're going to filter away some of those races in that period of time in order for the good races to have their moments. But it became the snowball effect of premierisation suddenly appeared, and we've now ended up in this position where, I mean, since January to now, I mean... Has it even been a thing that anyone has recognised on a Saturday afternoon or on what we call a Premier fixture? I don't think so.
John?
Only in the sense of those fixtures have benefited from increased prize money in places. I think that's the main... That's the tangible, isn't it? A lot of the branding and there's still sort of... There's a bid for levy funding for that national promotional campaign, which I'd have liked to have seen sort of lined up in advance of launching the thing. It's been a soft fill your way in sort of introduction.
Will the levy board now, after this soft launch, grant money to a promotional campaign for something whose concept is not really proven?
It's difficult. There's two schools of thought, isn't there? The BHA and everybody would argue that it makes sense to almost... softly and feel your way in and just not go all in from January 1st, whereas it's easy for me on the sidelines to say we should have had it all lined up and ready to go. I think that it's worth backing still as a concept. The protected window, getting the shot window right, makes sense to me. But it has been a little bit sort of feel your way in softly when it needed to be. It was promised to be radical.
OK. Let's move on. And talk about the Megson family removing their horses from Ben Pauling. Reports vary as to exactly how many there were, but there were at least 15 horses moved from Ben Pawling's yard. He's run 18 horses for them, I think, during the course of this season. They've gone to Jonjo O'Neill, they've gone to Fergal O'Brien. One or two of the horses have gone to run on the flat for Ed Dunlop, horses who've shown good bumper form. So some slightly unconventional manoeuvres as well as some slightly more conventional ones. I thought Ben Pawling was very good in the interview.
Very good in the
interview. Who knows what's happened, but...
Yeah, we can only ascertain our own opinion from the facts that we are presented with. Obviously, a lot of people have been reading the article. Was it David Walsh in the Times? That
about Pawling's dispute with the golf club members.
That's where the first dispute situation with what was happening at his training yard sort of came to light.
But these owners say that the two things are completely unconnected.
Of course. But in the build-up to it, imagine all when the news came out. When I heard about it at the racecourse earlier in the week, everyone was going, oh, this is in relation to what happened earlier in the week. I don't know, but this is my point about how things get exacerbated by the situation where you read that David Walsh article and then in the light of the next week, this happens. What owners do, every time an owner moves a horse, I have no issue. I never have an issue with it because that's their prerogative. They're paying the money. And owners can do as they please, really, because ultimately they're the ones funding what their horse does. Yeah. Trainers have to abide by it. It's unfortunate on some occasions. I've seen it myself. We've been part of it.
What we don't consider and aren't asked to consider is the consequence of your actions if you've got... Say you've got a sixth of a trainer's horses or a fifth of the trainer's horses and you remove those, that is then a fifth or a sixth of that trainer's workforce that are effective. Are affected, and then that might affect, I'm not saying it will in this case, but that could impact upon their jobs.
Yeah,
so that's what you've got to think as an owner, right, what effect am I leaving on this situation?
Yeah, you can sort of guess at the cause and effect and the reasons why, but the long and short of it is that he's lost a serious number of horses and that will have a knock-on effect for the staff that he employs and the way his business is shaped. And as an owner, I think there is... I completely agree. It's an owner's prerogative where they send their horses and what they do with them. But at the same time, I think I speak to your point that if you do have a major influence at a yard, maybe a bit more of a controlled, steady exit towards the end of a season where you at least give a trainer the chance to kind of rebuild. It just seemed very abrupt to me. But I don't know the ins and outs, but it did seem like, oh, wow, this news has just sprung the morning of Aintree.
And, of course, the owners are not only owners now, they're also key sponsors in the sport through My Pension Expert. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. Paddy Brennan is not retiring for the moment, it seems. He was second in the bumper at Aintree yesterday. He does not want to end on a ban. He got an 18-day ban for schooling in public at Wincanton, was it? It seems like such a long time ago. I had to check that was actually within the last seven-day period.
Yeah.
But I think it was.
Rings a bell.
How adult your brain
Harry
gets
Redknapp
after
colours,
we
yes.
Like
yes.
This.
Yes.
Exactly. Anyway, Mayor at Wincanton finished second. I don't think there's too much argument that it looked pretty bad, but he was done right at the upper end, Jonathan, of schooling in public. It was not deemed a non-trier.
Yeah, and I think that's probably fair. I'm always a little bit cautious when looking at stewards' decisions. It's like questioning referees a little bit. You don't want to undermine, you know, they've got a job to do. They're looking at the letter of the law, and I think there's probably about right. The fact Fergal O'Brien said, we're not going to appeal, his argument would be that it wasn't schooling in public. This was a jockey sort of following instructions and giving a fairly considerate ride. There's a lot of grey area in between the two, isn't there? But I think this one just went a little bit too far the wrong way and probably a fair punishment, which they seem to have accepted.
Yeah.
Backed her.
You backed her?
I did. I watched it all the way around, and all the way around I was saying, well...
Are you going to put her in the race?
At some point, he's just going to cut her loose and she's going to run past the short price favourite who was out in front. And he held on to her for much longer than I thought he would do. And I was surprised. I wasn't surprised, though, by the outcome of the stewards.
So that's that. And would you hope that he comes back rather than ends on a...
Absolutely,
18-day
yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's given more to the sport than most, so hopefully there'll be a happier ending for him.
Absolutely. Those were this week's talking points.
Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.